Welcome back to the Midday Show here on 98.1 KZE, and it really is my deep pleasure to welcome documentary filmmaker Rick Burns to the Midday Show. Rick has been a filmmaker for many years now, making documentaries such as, I'm just going to name a very few of the many incredible projects that he has produced, directed: The Way West, the Donner Party documentary, New York, a documentary, Driving While Black, and more recently, well, before Driving While Black, I believe, you released Oliver Sacks, His Own Life, a documentary which we talked about on my personal podcast back during the pandemic days, during the lockdown, when you were lucky enough to release that film. Rick, here's the beauty part. Oliver Sacks, His Own Life, will be having special screenings at Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, Friday at 5:45, Sunday at 2 o'clock, and on Monday next week at 5:30, you will be there for a Q&A at the Sunday 2 o'clock screening, or after, I should say, talking to your audience there. Welcome, Rick Burns, to the Midday Show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Adam, so much for having me. It's all really right. A pleasure to talk with you again.
Thank you. Same here. I really appreciate your coming on here. And oh boy, people, if you're free on Sunday, go to Time and Space Limited website, purchase some tickets for this screening. It's an amazing documentary. Just tell me, like, Oliver Sacks as a subject for a documentary, why Oliver? When did this begin? Why make the film?
Like most people of a certain age, I knew Oliver's work well through, you know, his countless articles in the London, New York Review of Books, London Review of Books, elsewhere, and through things like Awakenings and Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. But I didn't know Oliver. And I got a call one day in very early January 2015 from somebody who I knew slightly, friend of a friend, and that's Kate Edgar, Oliver's longtime editor, partner. And she said, Oliver's not going to die. He's had a mortal diagnosis. Would you come in and film him? And so there was no more preparation or background than that.
Okay.
And we, you know, within 2 weeks we were there, didn't raise money, no development period, came in and found ourselves in his apartment on Horatio Street with a group of friends of his and family members and his partner, Billy Hayes. And we began to interview him. And the first interview we did with him began on a Monday morning, February 9th, 2015, was 5 days long. Now, Adam, I mean, that's not the usual way we roll. You know, you do like an interview, and it might be 2 hours long. But with Oliver, who, though he had this mortal diagnosis, and he did indeed die 6 months later, was filled with energy, had no self-pity, and was completely there and wanted to talk and think and read for us. And so it was just off we were to this amazing race, which is a little bit of a race against time, to put it mildly.
What an honor, though.
It was a huge honor. I mean, there was something about, I met him a week before we began this interview, and he was very much Oliver Sacks, the extraordinary humorist who used to write for The New Yorker, you know, decades and decades ago. S.J. Perelman said of himself in the third person, they broke the mold before they made him. That's very much true of Oliver Sacks, that you quickly get the sense of how deeply unusual a person he was. And the thing, Adam, that was most moving to me is that he decided he would trust himself to us. And he died long before there's any film to see. And it wasn't until he died that we then interviewed a remarkable couple dozen of the people who knew him best. And so this story, which is a story of his own life, you know, and a story of a man with 6 months to live. And so those are the two stories that are kind of wound together in the film. And that he would trust us virtually sight unseen was moving. And, you know, as you say, it was an incredible honor. And there he was, fully himself, as I discovered, he could not ever be anything but that. He just part of the wonderfulness of Oliver Sacks was is that he's just what you see, what you hear is what you get. And it's rare to have someone that unguarded, who just like as an expression, this cannot go out on your radio, but as he said, when like the kind of the earpiece fell out of his ears, oh bugger, and then he looks up and he goes like, sometimes I say bugger and sometimes I say, I mean, that's on first meeting and that quality, and it's not quite an impulsiveness. And it's not quite, but there's a childlike immediacy to his personality, which I hope comes through in our film, and I think actually comes through in all his writing.
I think also you have an opportunity to explore in nuance his own troubles past, for
Good.
as he didn't really become popular in the culture until well into his middle age, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, he was born in 1933. And I would say for most of the next 50 years, he was kind of hanging on by a thread. He did not reveal that he was a gay man until 2015. I don't mean there weren't people who knew it in his private life, but nobody knew it. I mean, Robert Silver, who edited the great editor and founder of the New York Review of Books, who we interviewed for the film, he didn't know Oliver was gay. He just did not. He was so wounded growing up in a homophobic Britain in the 1940s, 50s, that he, his mother, when he came out to her at 18, just before he left for Oxford, said, to whom he was very, very close, this remarkable woman, gynecologist, surgeon, amazing. His dad was a doctor as well. And when he comes out to her, she says, you're an abomination to me. I wish I had never, you had never been born. And he fled England, understandably, in 1960, in England that, Alan Turing was chemically castrated for his homosexuality. So you could be imprisoned for it, or your mom could abominate you. And he left, and while he did write home and come home, he never came back, and he still was, fleeing from himself for years and years in America. And that difficulty and that pain and trying to find himself and be himself and find a partner, which he never did until 6 or 7 years before he died. Billy Hayes, remarkable writer, photographer, in his own right, and. So he was lonely. He was on his own. He was self-destructive. He was a methamphetamine addict, and he was a neurologist, and he was trying to be first, a bench scientist, as they say, and that didn't work out. And this extraordinary thing, Adam, which was that he, when he found himself at a hospital in the Bronx, Beth Abraham, which was a warehouse for people of extreme neurological circumstances. That's when he found the patients who became the people he studied in Awakenings. As you can see, Adam, he died 9 years ago now. And I feel him as someone who knew him only slightly over a 6 month period, that he's alive within me, in a way that's really powerful.
I was lucky enough to get to talk to you about this today, and I appreciate your coming on the midday show. And audiences can spend more time with you on Sunday at 2 o'clock. There'll be one of the screenings, three screenings of Oliver Sacks's own life. You'll be there for a conversation afterwards. Thank you so much for coming on the midday show, Rick. I really appreciate it.
Adam, thanks for letting me be with you today. It's really special.
You're listening to 98.1 KZE.